Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you from the O2 Arena, which we are informed by the ticker tape illuminated banner running around the centre of the arena is currently a construction area because the final is done and dusted. Andy Murray is the champion of the ATP World Tour Finals. He is the year-end world number one. Djokovic is, well, where is he? We will talk about that. We'll talk about Murray. I mean, David Law, who is alongside me, and I have just finished commentating. We both did that second set. We both did the winning moment. It was a very odd thing that we were both in separate commentary boxes commentating on the same thing. David, no doubt, with a lot more aplomb than me, but I did my best to learn from the master. I mean, it was just quite an experience to talk about. I can't imagine what this moment is like for Andy Murray. It's just quite something what he's achieving before our very eyes as we describe it, isn't it? It's quite something.
It really is. So it's quite something for me to hear that you just said, Catherine. And if you could see what I look like right now, you would see some bright red cheeks as I blush profusely here on the Tennis Podcast. That was a pretty surprising couple of hours of tennis for me. I was very, very confident on the part of Djokovic that he would win that final today, having seen the way he played against Kei Nishikori, admittedly a player not at the level of Andy Murray, having seen Murray, I don't know how he beat Milos Raonic after the longest match in the tournament's history, just two or three days after another one of the longest match in the tournament's history against Kei Nishikori. I just thought he'd have nothing left at all. What he did, I think, was very similar to what he did against Stan Wawrinka a couple of nights ago. He just dug in, and there was a thou shalt not pass look to him. But I was very, very surprised at the way Novak Djokovic, frankly, didn't turn up today.
He didn't. Well, I should say, we're pretty much in the immediate aftermath. Yes, the court is being deconstructed around our ears. I'm having deja vu. We recorded this very podcast in identical circumstances last year, didn't we? We'll try and make it sound different. The arena is being deconstructed around our ears. Andy Murray lifted that trophy probably about 25 minutes ago, something like that. We've got quotes coming through. I've been monitoring Twitter. Quotes are coming through from their respective press conferences, and they're quite interesting, particularly on the Novak Djokovic side. Obviously, we'll talk more about Andy Murray because that's what he deserves, but we must talk about Novak Djokovic. He said, repeatedly it seems in the press conference, he said, "I had no chance to win that match. It was clear from the very beginning that I had no chance to win that match." Now, I find that surprising because actually the very beginning is when it was most even. He won his two opening service games without dropping a set. The errors didn't start coming till midway through that first set. And yes, once they did start coming, boy, did they come. And that was a big issue. And he, of course, referenced that. He said, "Anything I would try today, I would miss." And yes, it did end up that way. But it didn't seem that way from the very start to me. If he went into that match thinking, "I've got no way of winning this," and if he was thinking after two games, "I've got no hope of winning this," that really is alarming, an alarming thought of what's going on with Djokovic mentally for me.
It was like looking at your trusty computer that has never let you down. It always just does exactly what you wanted to do. And then one day it just starts getting little bugs and things aren't working the way you want them to, and no matter what you try, it doesn't seem to fix it. And Djokovic looked like that out there today. He almost seemed to me to go into a bit of a depression halfway through that match, that I can't do anything. And it's really, there was a quietness to him. He wasn't getting angry, he wasn't showing defiance, and we were actually hoping to see some defiance for his sake, to see that one or two points that he might win and then the roar, and we didn't see that at all. Now maybe that's because of the work he's been doing with his life coach, Pepe Imaz, in trying to keep calm. Maybe that's something that they believe is the right way to go about things. I just have no idea. I mean, maybe he was just in a downer and he hadn't got any of that fury inside his heart at that particular moment. But he couldn't turn things around until he went 4-1 down in that second set. And he started, I tell you what it reminded me of, the semi-final against Roger Federer at the US Open a few years ago, when he was match point down and he was getting thoroughly outplayed by Roger Federer. And in the depths of despair, he smashed a forehand winner on return at match point down, loosened up, and suddenly started to play. I thought at that stage, midway through the second set, the way Djokovic was hitting the ball, that the match was still very much in the balance. Even though it was 6-3, 4-1 in favour of Andy Murray, there was suddenly a looseness about the way Djokovic was carrying himself. And I thought, if he can just find his rhythm here, Murray's perhaps going to start feeling the fatigue of all of those matches in a row that he's won. And I was surprised in a way that Djokovic didn't come all the way back to level. I mean, it was his whole demeanour throughout the match, his whole performance, I found pretty bemusing.
Yeah, I know you've used the word listless, and I think that was a really good word. He did look listless. There were moments when he did look depressed. I would agree with that, certainly just at a complete loss. And you're right, you know, in that, after having already been broken back once, in that moment when Murray was serving for the match a second time and he was 30 love and then went to 30 all, and the signs of stress there and the signs of fatigue, he suddenly was puffing out his cheeks, he suddenly looked exhausted, he was showing all the signs of being wounded that a predator, a vicious predator, would pounce upon. And Djokovic just didn't have it in him today to be that predator, didn't have anything close, frankly, and it's really unusual to see that. Usually, you know, he's a win at all costs, you know, predator, you know, tennis predator, and he was so far from that today. It's really difficult to reconcile this Novak Djokovic with the guy that won everything at the beginning of the year. I don't think I can remember a more contrasting season in terms of two halves of a season, other than, you know, when catastrophic injury has intervened. It really has been bizarre. And by the way, David, we are informed now by the ticker tape that the O2 Arena is a hard hat only zone.
But you don't appear to have a hard hat.
I can see lots of people not wearing hard hats.
No, including you and including me.
I'm guessing this is advice that is not usually heeded. But anyway, something to be aware of. And actually, just in front of us, while the stadium was being deconstructed, just moments before we started recording, Boris Becker wandered out from the locker room area into the arena, stood just by the court, which is scattered with confetti and has wires all over it and people taking away boardings and hoardings and scoreboards and everything. And he took what looked to me like a very short video, a 1 or 2 second sort of panning shot. Maybe he does that a second every day thing. I don't know. And then strode off the court looking, I mean, I could be attaching significance to it that isn't there, but it certainly looked poignant to me, what he was doing. And everything that was going through my mind was, will we see him here next year in the same capacity? Will we see him at the Australian Open? Djokovic has, of course, been asked about his coaching situation in press, and he said, I don't want to talk about it. He was asked, have you got any announcements to make? And he said, no, not now. He didn't say no. He said, now's not the right time. So, yeah, as I say, look, I could be attaching significance that isn't there, but it looked poignant to me. As it stands at the moment, I would be surprised if he turned up in I think Doha will be his first competitive event. Same for Andy Murray. They're both planning to play Abu Dhabi and Doha, I think. I'd be surprised if he showed up in Doha with the same team along with him. How it will change and what it will look like in a couple of months' time, I don't know. But something's got to change for him.
Yeah, I mean, actually, strictly speaking, I don't, from the outside, I don't necessarily think something has to change. I mean, the guy's gone from overwhelming best player in the world 6 months ago to kind of a shadow of himself, even though I have to say 24 hours ago I really thought he was back. I mentioned that on my Twitter feed. I think the guy is back to his best. Now, I was wrong. The fact of the matter is he didn't play against a guy who caused him any trouble really last night. He played brilliantly, which is part of the reason for that, but he was all over the place.
But the interesting thing about that is he should have come away from that match with Nishikori thinking the same thing
and
you
I think
were
he did.
Thinking, yeah, I'm back.
I interviewed him last night,
Catherine.
From the
sounds of the quotes coming out of the press conference tonight, he's saying, I basically never thought I had a chance of winning today against Andy.
I think he thought that during the match. I think that probably came over him. I think maybe he's slightly...
He said from the very moment it started,
maybe,
I knew
yeah.
I had no chance, which
maybe.
Strikes me as very strange. And in terms of confidence, how can a guy that played so well last night... I know Nishikori was physically not there and not able to muster much of a challenge, but he still needed beating.
And he sounded so up for it though last night in the interview I did with him for BBC. He was so fresh-faced. He looked like himself, and it was a shock to me to see him revert to the type of the latter stages of the second half of 2016. Just on the subject of the coaching, although I can see no reason on paper why they wouldn't be together in terms of the success they've had, I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see exactly the same coaching setup for Novak Djokovic next year. I think he would have come out and made very clear his plans otherwise and got behind that structure if he was planning to carry it on. Maybe it's coming to an end and he needs to renegotiate it. Who knows exactly, but I agree with you.
It's going to be very, very interesting. He has, incidentally, I think, confirmed in that press conference that he will play Abu Dhabi and Doha, as has Andy Murray. He said, just got a few quotes. I think he's in press as we record. Just a few quotes came through just as we started recording. He said, I did wake up this morning and I felt blooming knackered and I am exhausted. Of course he is, but just to hear him confirm, I woke up this morning on the day of one of the biggest matches of my life and I felt exhausted. You know, that must feel awful. You want to wake up feeling full of the joys of springs and raring to go, and he didn't
huge
feel that way.
Huge credit to him that he played like that given how he was
well,
feeling
quite.
Because you didn't see that out on the court. I tell you what frustrates me sometimes watching Murray is I've loved over the last year the way he's directed his outbursts positively and
consistently. Has he?
Very often, Catherine, over the most part of the year.
Yesterday.
No, look, listen to me. Listen. Over the most part of the year, you've heard him say something that I don't think I've heard until the last 18 months, which is, let's go, to himself. It's always been, come on, let's go. And there have been at least two of the three group matches, and again yesterday, when he hasn't been like that at all. He's been inward-looking, he's been self-critical, he's been sarcastic about himself, he's been smiling at his coaching team as if to say, I'm rubbish, aren't I? I mean, everything you told me isn't working. I mean, this isn't going to work out, is it? Look at my legs, they won't move. And today, well, he was just businesslike today. He just got on with it. Personally, I love to see that self-inspiration from his mouth. I think it is self-perpetuating. But, you know, to hold it together and not let the demons overtake him today, I think was really impressive.
Yeah, because I'm guessing he walked onto court thinking, I can't afford any of that nonsense against this guy. This guy usually beats me. This guy is usually impenetrable. I can't afford to give him anything. I mean, in the end, he probably could have afforded a bit more nonsense. But I was pleased not to see the nonsense that we saw. I mean, I have to say, as much of a fan of Andy Murray as I am, I found that Raonic match a tough watch. The sarcasm stuff. We shouldn't be talking about negatives in respect of Andy Murray because he doesn't deserve that. He's just achieved something utterly extraordinary, and we'll come on to that. But just first, I found that a really tough watch. It's the sarcasm, which you just described brilliantly what he seems to be emoting in those moments. It's tough to watch as an Andy Murray fan, as somebody that's sort of trying to support him. I'm a Milos Raonic fan as well, by the way. But anyway, it's difficult. It's really difficult to watch somebody. It's Jekyll and Hyde, isn't it? I mean, that's not the Andy Murray that we know. It seems so counterproductive. I mean, look, he won the match. So it's difficult to argue with. He very nearly didn't win the match. But that sarcasm is... It's almost a bit sort of crazed, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think we will ever fully understand Andy Murray. I don't know whether he will ever fully understand himself, because when you talk to him, it's quite a quick flick of the switch after the match when he starts looking at himself almost in the third person and evaluating his own state of mind. And he acknowledged that sarcasm in one of the press conferences I went to, which I was quite surprised that he did that, but he actually raised it. And he clearly doesn't approve of himself.
Oh.
But it is, you know, I mean, Goran used to joke about there being three Gorans. And I think Andy Murray is probably the closest that there is to a genuine split personality.
I definitely think he's not okay with it. When the split with Amélie Mauresmo happened and she did that interview with L'Équipe that broke on the eve of the French Open, and he was, of course, then faced with a barrage of questions asking him to comment on Mauresmo's comments in L'Équipe that the reason she didn't want to continue, or one of the reasons, was because she couldn't reconcile the Andy that she was confronted with on the court with the guy she knew off it. And he seemed to wince and recoil in perhaps shame, you know, certainly embarrassment at that, because, you know, it was close to home. I think he's a reflective enough character to do that kind of introspection and to acknowledge things in himself that he might like to change. But hey, why should he be changing anything? He's the year-end world number one. He's the Barclays ATP World Tour Finals champion. He is the greatest athlete Great Britain has ever produced, for me, hands down. We won't get into that debate. It's too long. But I mean, he's...
I think that what's nice about an occasion like this, that is certainly from a British perspective, it is on BBC National Network Television. It was on Sky Television. It was on BBC Radio 5 Live. Everything else was shoved aside because this was the concentration point. TalkSport had it covered as well. You know, the whole nation was concentrated on Andy Murray today, and I think that is really important because he deserves that. He deserves to be acknowledged as one of, if not the greatest athlete that these Isles have ever produced, and he lived up to that today and over the course of the last 6 months with every step. And I mean, to me, as wonderful as Djokovic was in the first half of the year, winning two slams and everything else, look at the year as a whole. The fact that Murray reached two of those slams that Djokovic beat him in at the start of the year, and he, aside from a little dip in the spring, he was consistency personified. He won Olympic gold, for goodness sake.
Which doesn't even count towards that year-end ranking.
Was in a whisker of reaching the Davis Cup final again. I mean, he deserves to be acknowledged and recognised as the world number one for 2016.
He looked completely overwhelmed, didn't he, in the moments. There was a celebration. He didn't do the complete disbelief. There was a very brief celebration. Hat came off, racket went to the ground. He pointed to the sky, as he usually does, which fittingly was also, of course, the number one sign. Then he immediately retreated to his chair and he just sat there and stared into space with his mouth open in a slightly gormless expression. It was just... oh my goodness, I don't think he's had much time to adjust to these achievements, because unlike Djokovic with the French Open, where it had been everything he had ever wanted and dreamed of and knew he could achieve and wouldn't be satisfied until he'd done it for the past however many years, that wasn't the case with Andy Murray and winning this title and becoming world number one this year. It's all quite recent for him that it's become this thing that he's been striving for. So for it all to have suddenly come to him... I mean, I imagine it's going to take a long time, a long, long time for this to really sink in. I hope he can at least enjoy it, but to fully appreciate what he's done is going to take a while.
I think the nice thing is that he now does get a proper break. He can go away.
2 weeks.
Well, you know,
that's what he said he's having. So that's
him,
another
that's
quote I've seen come through. It is a lot, but he gave that quote. He said, "I am exhausted. I woke up this morning and I was completely exhausted. Everything ate. I need a rest. I need a break from tennis." And then he was asked, "So how?" He said, "Well, I've got 2 weeks starting on Monday, and then I'm going to Miami for what sounds like the most bone-crushingly horrendous training block with Ivan Lendl imaginable." So, I mean, it's just, that is what counts for the world's best athletes. That's what counts as an incredible break before returning to
but I think
the incredible grind.
Enough time for him to just reflect a little bit as well. I think he will probably lie back a few days there and think, wow, you know, especially given how long this has taken. You know, it's taken him 7 years. We talked about it in the World Number One show a couple of weeks ago, to get to that point from having been number two in the world for the first time 7 years ago, but to actually do it over the full year. Novak Djokovic has done it 4 times. Roger Federer has done it 5 times. Pete Sampras's one remaining massive record is that he's done it 6 times to end the year number one. It's the ultimate, really. And Murray's done it now. You can never take that away from him.
And we didn't think it would happen this year. We repeatedly, when we asked one another to make predictions, we said it'll happen, but not this year. I mean, up until, you know, let's fess up until... days before it happened, we didn't think it would happen this year, and to think of him now ending the year, I mean, as you can tell, I'm once again struggling for superlatives, because it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary what's happened tonight and over the course of this year, and as many people are pointing out, Sports Personality of the Year is probably on lockdown again in an Olympic year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I almost feel that you want somebody else to get it, because there have been so many achievements from British sports people over the last few months, and particularly at the Olympics. So many deserving people.
Yeah, give Andy Murray a separate award. The Andy Murray Award,
but look,
for excellence.
You know, my conclusion is, how can you not give it to Andy Murray after a year like this? How can you not? He won Olympic gold, same as they all did. He won Wimbledon. He's the world number one. There's no compelling argument. Really. And, well, that's a side note. And I mean, it's been a pleasure to be able to watch it, to cover it, and to talk about it here on the Tennis Podcast. It really has.
It really has. And I was just about to wrap up there, because I was thinking, what a lovely, eloquent note to wrap things up for. But you're clutching your phone there, David. You're clutching your phone. And I know what that means. I just know. I've got dread in my heart. He's got the pole vaults, guys. Over to you, David.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pole vault. Here we go, folks. So there's a couple of them. And Catherine, where are you? Where's she going? Anyway, we don't need her for this bit. That's absolutely fine. I wanted to know, I mean, you talked, Catherine, about the Raonic match and how uncomfortable a watch you found it. And And I heard a couple of people say exactly the same thing. People that I work with on Five Live, producers who don't necessarily cover tennis all the time, and were saying, how do you two just sit, you know, Russell Fuller and myself commentating, how do you sit through this and not get so worked up about it that you can't really describe what's going on?
But I think we're talking about different things there. I wasn't referring to the tension of it. And the saving match points. And I mean, I completely see that. I was referring specifically to it being difficult to watch Andy Murray behaving that way.
But anyway, I see your point. I mean, there are some tennis matches and sporting occasions, I've heard members of my family almost not enjoying them because they're so tight, so tense. There's somebody they want to win so badly. And I wanted to know from our listeners, do you actually enjoy watching your player, even when they win, winning in that torturous way? And we had 530 votes. 60% said that they still enjoy it. 40% said that they don't. That's quite a large number, isn't it?
Yep. Are they all West Brom fans?
We don't win those. We don't win very often. So, anyway, Catherine Whittaker, that's about as enthusiastic a response from Catherine as I've heard in pole vault. So we're getting somewhere, folks. The other one is very straightforward, Catherine. Would you like... Now, in the Times newspaper this week, it was reported that the O2 Arena that is rapidly being taken down around our very ears as we sit here over the court, as the seats are being taken off. We are actually being looked at as if we're sitting in seats that are about to be ripped up. People were saying in the Times that the ATP finals may well stay here for a long time, maybe even permanently, indefinitely. And I asked, would you like the ATP finals to stay in London for the next 10 years or more, or go somewhere else? What do you think they said, Catherine? 562 votes.
I think that people said they'd like it to stay.
What would you like?
I wouldn't like it to stay here permanently, and not because I don't think they do a fantastic job. I think it's quite possible that if it were to move, wherever it moved to, wouldn't do as good job as they do here. I just think that is the defining feature of this event, that it does move around. Some places will be better than others, and the places that aren't so good, it won't stay for so long. But it is a defining feature of this event. It makes it that bit different. And yes, a few more years in London, let's enjoy it while it's here because it is great, but let it naturally move on when the time comes.
74%, Catherine, agree with you and want it to stay. So there you go. 26% would like it to leave, so the majority quite happy for it. Hey, did you hear how enthusiastic Catherine sounded about that? I think she's getting one over here by pole vault.
It's a bit enthusiastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, that's about the size of it, Catherine.
Just the two.
Yeah, just the two this time. You know, I don't want to overdo it. That's pole vault. Can I just say as well, thank you to everybody who sent in their tennis podcast pets to cheer up Catherine.
Now
I
am
feeling
smiling.
A bit down in the dumps.
Do you know what?
She was unwell, weren't you, Catherine? You were in your sick bed.
I was in a bit of a bad way this week, not in any critical way, but in a very feeling sorry for myself. I had actual flu. I've now realised why people that have had flu get annoyed by people calling a cold the flu, because it is not the same. No one sweats as much as I did this week with a cold, let me tell you. Anyway, I had actual flu and it was all very miserable. And then all these pictures of dogs come flooding into my Twitter notifications and I couldn't wipe the smile off my face. Honestly, it cheered me right up. The power of dogs is extraordinary. And on that note...
I was just going to send her lots of polls to sort of read the results from, but apparently that wasn't going to get it done.
No. Only dogs. Thank you to everybody that sent in dogs and turkeys and what did we have? Gerbils and...
Oh, the ferret.
The ferret. I've forgotten the name of the ferret.
Charlie
the ferret. And Babs the turkey and so many wonderful dogs. Dogs and tennis is just the perfect combination.
See, our listeners are all right. I didn't believe what you said about them earlier at all. See, they're nice.
On that note, I'm going to wrap things up. We are bringing you a few more tennis podcasts this season, so don't start your morning process just yet. We will be bringing you one on the eve of the Davis Cup final between Argentina and Croatia. No prizes for guessing who David Law is supporting in that one. It is going to be held in Zagreb, his former home, I should say. So there's a legitimate bias there, and we'll be bringing you one after the Davis Cup final as well. So don't worry just yet. The tennis season might be winding down, but the Tennis Podcast is not. There are a couple more to come, and we will be back with you later this week. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.